welcome back to the Morning Mix. I'm Anthony Fest. What associations does the name Rwanda bring up? Probably the first connection most people make is the 1994 massacres, often called the genocide. But are people in the U.S. told the full story of Rwanda in 1994? How do the events of that year drive events today in Rwanda and elsewhere in southeastern Africa? And what's the U.S. government up to in that part of the world? To address these issues, I'm joined in the studio by Anne Garrison. She's been studying the Great Lakes region of Africa for years and reporting on it for the KPFA Weekend News, for Afrobeat Radio at our New York sister station, WBAI, and for the SF Bayview newspaper. Welcome to the Morning Mix, Anne.
Thank you, Anthony.
And joining us by phone from Quebec is Canadian journalist Robin Philpott. He's the author of Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. Welcome to the Morning Mix, Robin.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, let's begin with Anne. Some of our Morning Mix listeners probably have heard your Africa stories on the weekend news. So tell us briefly, what do you find so compelling about these countries, Rwanda, Uganda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, whose recent histories, of course, are so intertwined, so compelling that you've made them the focus of your reporting?
Well, I took an interest in Congo because I became interested in mining aggression, and that led me to these stories that Robin and I have both spent a lot of time on. He more than I. I really want to highlight his book. But as he explains in the book, Rwanda has become central to the new imperial narrative. It is the reason for bombing Syria, Sudan, Libya. Who's going to be next? The responsibility to protect discourse, the humanitarian war discourse. Rwanda is constantly invoked, and next year it's going to be really intense because it's the 20th anniversary, and we'll have the 20th anniversary of the genocide, or of the 1994 massacres, and there'll be a huge celebration of humanitarian war.
Okay, and let's turn to Robin Philpott now. Again, your book is titled Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. So let's examine that title. That should make a good beginning to our discussion. Explain the phrase imperial fiction, if you will.
Yeah, well, the idea of a useful imperial fiction is that, we've noticed it in the last, say, 10 years since people have developed this doctrine called the R2P, Responsibility to Protect. And the starting point is always Rwanda. And as one of our authors who wrote an important book on Libya said, everywhere is Rwanda for the humanitarian imperialist. My point is that Rwanda is not Rwanda. In other words, what it refers to is an upside down and inaccurate and basically a lie about what really happened. And so what happens is, for instance, in this run-up to an almost invasion of Syria, Rwanda was constantly referred to in the Security Council and elsewhere. In the war on Libya, once again, people referred to Rwanda, and they brought out people who were supposedly involved, who had supposedly fought against the genocide. The fact is that if we start going back to that period, and particularly the period that led up to April 6, 1994, when the presidential plane was shot down, we realize what we've been told about those events is extremely limited and often false. The sad thing about it is that here we did have terrible massacres. A lot of people in different camps died in Rwanda, and then even more people have died in the Democratic Republic of the Congo since. And yet we are basically told, don't look at what happened because that was a genocide. You can't even question the story, the official story, the narrative which is promoted very strongly in the United States, throughout the world, in fact. It makes me think of the Mark Twain statement, is that a lie can get halfway around the world while the truth is still tying up its running shoes.
Mm-hmm. And when you use in your title the phrase, the new scramble for Africa, you're referring to what, world powers trying to acquire rare mineral resources?
It is amazing, yeah. First of all, the mineral resources, that was behind and involved, that was very much part of the Rwanda's invasion in 1996, 1998 of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. That was a control of those resources in the eastern Congo. The new scramble is probably, it's a reference, of course, everybody knows, is to the 1885 scramble for Africa, where Europeans basically divided up that continent. And what we see now is a similar kind of scramble, where you have an enormous number of troops stationed, European and American troops stationed, and North American troops stationed on the continent of Africa. And basically it's a new division. It will never be exactly the same, but it is a scramble to control the resources and the countries. And what is the way it's done is you develop a fiction: we're there to protect, we're there to help. Whereas in fact, it is no less devastating and colonialist in nature than the original one in the 1880s and 1890s.
Now, going back to Rwanda specifically, the first words of your book are a quote from Boutros Ghali, who was Secretary General at the UN in 1994. You quote him as saying, and I quote, "The genocide in Rwanda was 100% the responsibility of the Americans," unquote. Yeah. Now, later, the U.S. exercised a veto to deny him a second term as Secretary General, and there were probably many factors in that. For one thing, he was resisting the bombing of Yugoslavia. But why did Boutros Ghali say that? Do you concur, and how would this have been a U.S. responsibility?
Well, that quote, I originally found it in some newspapers, and then I obtained the two interviews with Boutros Ghali in Paris, and I went and met him. And he said, yes, of course, that's true, that's what I say. Because he said, in April and May 1994, when the UN was about to try and do something to protect lives of Tutsis and Hutus in this war, which had been foisted upon Rwanda, the United States, with the help of the UK, blocked all attempts, and in fact had all troops removed, except for about 250 of the United Nations troops in what they called the UNAMIR. So he said, we were trying, and there were efforts, largely from France, Nigeria, and South Africa, to have some kind of intervention which would have held the party, kept the parties from fighting. They would have re-established a ceasefire, and enormous numbers of lives would have been so saved. The United States didn't want to. The reason is, and Boutros Ghali said it, and other people have pointed out, is, of course, the United States wanted the RPF, led by Kagame, to win a decisive victory. And people at that time were saying the goal was not Kigali, but Kinshasa. In other words, they were changing the political geography of that area. And the people they were counting on at that time, basically the United States, the UK in particular, were Museveni in Uganda, and this new man who they had under control, which was called Kagame.
And Kinshasa, of course, being the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the very large Central African nation with these two small but powerful eastern neighbors, Rwanda and Uganda. And Garrison, what would you like to add here?
I'd like to say something about the Rwandan and Zionist alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Robin pointed out several events during which that was formed in his book, and I've been following it for a long time too. One thing about the R2P and the argument that we have to bomb other countries to stop mass atrocities is that it's always countries on Israel's enemy list.
No, you know, it's an important point is that in 1995, you know, the term genocide, and I like to quote Chomsky and Ed Herman when they say, and Ed Herman wrote this book, The Politics of Genocide. He says, we have to stop using this word because it's dishonest. It is a way to advance imperial interests, and it does not help us understand what happened. It's used as one of these blanket terms. It's almost like a gag order for people who want to say, well, maybe it didn't happen exactly this way. But in Israel wanted to keep control of that word. They don't recognize it for the Armenians because of their strategic alliance at times with Turkey. And there was a time where they were basically blessed. The Rwandans were blessed with the right to use that word. They had a big conference there in 95. And there were some people from the Wiesenthal Center and others who helped develop this memorializing around the genocide and for understanding that how this can be used for other reasons. And then one of the first places where Paul Kagame went was to Israel. And I have a photo in the book of his visit to Israel and meeting with Netanyahu just prior to his first invasion of the Congo. So there was a very close ties between Israel and Rwanda. And in many ways, Rwanda since then has operated in Central Africa in a manner that's very, very similar to Israel's way it operates in the Middle East.
It's 8:35 on the KPFA Morning Mix. I'm Anthony Fest. I'm speaking about Rwanda and East Central Africa. Our guests today are Robin Philpott, a Canadian author, and KPFA's own Ann Garrison, weekend news reporter and also reporter on WBAI's Afrobeat Radio. We don't have a lot of time left, so unfortunately we've got to skip ahead to the present day, skipping over the greatest human catastrophe of the late 20th century, early 21st century, the Congo Wars, which claimed millions of lives. But moving from 1994 to today, some things haven't changed. Paul Kagame came to power in 1994, became president of Rwanda in 2000, is still president today. He's conducted elections, but he's made life difficult for those who actually contest those elections. And Garrison's done quite a few stories about Victoire Ingabire, the opposition leader who ran against Kagame in the last election. She's since been put in prison. Among the charges against her was that phrase, promoting genocide ideology. And just recently, the country's high court heard her appeal and then gave her a longer sentence. So, Anne, what can you tell us about Victoire Ingabire and how she fits into the larger picture in Rwanda and the region?
She's not guilty. In fact, the charges are so ridiculous that if she wasn't facing another 12 years in prison and her family were not facing their fourth Christmas without her, it would be a howler. They're saying that she spread rumors to incite people to rise up against the state. They're also saying that she minimized the genocide by asking that Hutu victims also be remembered in the memorial sites. And then they're saying that she conspired with a terrorist group in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, to violently overthrow the government of Rwanda. Now, the idea that Victoire Ingabire would conspire to commit any kind of violence is absolutely ridiculous. I've never met anyone more adamantly opposed to violence and more of a believer in all these Western institutions that we claim to support: dialogue, debate, democracy. That's where she puts her faith. Courts, law, rule of law.
And that, of course, is a phrase that's used by the Obama administration and some of its predecessors. And despite putting a presidential candidate in prison, the Rwandan government is still on very good terms with the U.S. What are they getting from the U.S. for this? Robin Philpott?
What is Rwanda getting from the U.S.?
What does Rwanda get for its friendship?
Well, it depends totally on the United States, totally, for its military and for everything, for the aid, for its reputation, its ability to circulate in the world without the support of the U.S. Kagame will just fall off there. Like, they have a huge army there. It is through that, with that army, that they're able to control the Eastern Congo, where the United States and United States interests and Canadian and European as well are making a killing. They're making enormous amounts of money, basically from that kind of control, in that area. The thing about Victoire, And I'd like to recommend another book. I hope people might read my book to understand that period in the early 90s up until now. But one of his chief of staff and former ambassador of Rwanda to the United States, Theogene Rudasingwa, who now lives in the United States, just recently published a book in which he confirms every one of these positions that Anne is talking about and he describes the 2003 election where a man by the name of
Robin.
Yeah, and he says, well, we decided to run the election, maybe we would allow him to have 75%, we would allow cheating and so on, but then he said then the RPF gave him 100%, gave Kagame 100%. In other words, it's a total disrespect for the electoral process, and that's what Victoire suffered from, and then she was put in prison as well. So,
okay, Canadian author Robin Philpott, your book is Rwanda and the New Scramble for Africa, From Tragedy to Useful Imperial Fiction. Thanks for joining me this morning, and thanks to KPFA weekend news reporter Anne Garrison for joining me as well.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks to both of you. Bye.
Bye.